China is making massive waves in the global auto market after carmaker Geely bought a $9 billion stake in Germany's Daimler, the owner of Mercedes-Benz. Geely's shares jumped some 8% on Monday after the deal was announced late Friday to buy 9.7% of the firm. But the Daimler acquisition is a major gamble. Li calls it a, quote, battle against foreign companies such as Google and Uber.
Even as polls find more Americans warming up to President Trump's tax reform, there's one sector that is stone cold to the changes: developers and advocates of affordable housing. That's because most affordable housing projects across the U.S. are funded by a tax credit. So when the corporate tax rate was slashed from 35 to 21% in December, the value of those tax credits fell dramatically, hurting every facet of affordable housing development.
Anti-Semitic cartoons and neo-Nazi propaganda. This is a private group on an encrypted messaging app set up to influence the Italian election. According to researchers at the Institute for Strategic Dialogue, an NGO that advises governments and the private sector on countering extremism, it's part of a global trend of right-wing extremist collaboration to get far-right or populist politicians into power. This matters because immigration is the key battleground in Sunday's vote.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's February 27th, 5:10 in the morning. Glad you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. Today on the broadcast, in just a minute, we're going to be talking about the NCAA basketball corruption case. Lisa Dress is here from Serafin & Associates Crisis Communication. The NCAA is in full crisis mode in this, just ahead of March Madness, and we'll have a conversation about it. And also later on in the program, there's a new Illinois State task force launching to attack joblessness among youth. That's coming in our second segment this morning. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are off 26 points this morning. NASDAQ futures are down 7. S&P futures are down about 5. Around the globe this morning, markets generally mixed in Europe, with the market in London higher and then the markets in France and Germany lower. And in Asia this morning, markets in Japan up almost 1%, but down almost 1% in China. The Nikkei is up 236 points this morning. The Hang Seng is off almost 250 points. And oil this morning trading at $63.76 a barrel, down about 57 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you this morning. Democrats in Georgia are blasting the state's lieutenant governor, saying his threat against Delta Airlines for severing ties with the National Rifle Association is proof that Republican lawmakers are in the pocket of the gun lobby. Statements came shortly after the lieutenant governor and candidate for governor, Casey Cagle, tweeted that he would use his position to kill proposed sales tax exemptions on jet fuel. Unless Delta reverses its position, Delta could lose tens of millions of dollars. Panama's government says it is formally investigating a complaint that executives for President Trump's family hotel business were illegally occupying a 70-story luxury Trump hotel amid a management dispute. The public ministry said it's investigating whether there was any punishable conduct in the matter at Trump International Hotel in Panama, and that it intended to ask for more information from both sides on this. Well, let's begin this morning with the situation with the NCAA basketball corruption cases. It started really hitting the fan on Friday. A number of colleges and universities have been implicated in this. Lisa Dress is with us this morning from Serafin & Associates, crisis communication expert. Lisa, good morning.
Good morning.
So give us a sense of what's going on and how big it is.
Well, in the sports world, in the NCAA world, this is chaos. When you have so far 20 programs that are implicated in an FBI wiretap, and as a friend of mine as a federal judge, we were talking about last night, wiretapping requires a warrant signed by a district judge. Wiretapping is a big deal. Nobody takes them lightly. So they had to be on to something big and wanted to lock in incriminating statements. And when you have a coach like Sean Miller at Arizona, who is on tape talking about $100,000, and again, we don't know, he hasn't been charged with anything yet. This is a trickle-down effect, and more and more and more things are going to come out, and the timing couldn't be worse for the NCAA on the heels of March Madness.
I can't imagine any more bigger crisis for these schools. Just you mentioned Arizona, but other schools that have been implicated, Duke, North Carolina, Texas, Kentucky, Michigan State, these are all the schools that we see participating in March Madness from year over year. What do you think is going on in the crisis centers of these schools today?
Well, clearly a lot of universities do have crisis preparedness, and full disclosure, I'm a big University of Arizona alumna fan, huge basketball fan. I was crushed to hear about Sean Miller. But on Friday, before this all broke, at 1:10 in the afternoon, I got an email as an alumna from Arizona from the athletic director talking about the athletic program's ethics. And they have a great responsibility, and they will always do the right thing, and yada, yada, yada. And I'm sitting here going, why am I getting this from the athletic director as an alumna? And hours later, bam, out came the news. So actually, in the world of crisis communications, Arizona was attempting to do a little bit of damage control before the story came out, but you kind of wonder why it was happening at the time.
Right. Should they have done something different? Like, should they have sent you an email right away saying, hey, listen, here's our ethics statement, but we're also under investigation?
That's probably something they don't want to talk about too much. But, you know, the NCAA president then pushed it back all on the universities, and especially in the Arizona case, they said, University of Arizona, it's up to you whether you have Sean Miller coach on Saturday or not. It's up to you what you do with Sean Miller because he hasn't been charged. He hasn't been, you know, anything other than an implication.
These serious charges, by the way, two of the cases are similar. They involve college coaches allegedly taking bribes from businessmen in exchange for steering players to those businesses. That's sort of like the worst kind of thing to happen in a college program, isn't it?
Well, you have boosters.
Yeah.
And boosters all the time pay in part or private planes, money to salaries, et cetera, et cetera. The NCAA is such a business. It's an absolute business. And when you have these boosters making those advancements to personnel, this is not something new, right? This has been talked about for years and years and years and years. And all of a sudden it took the FBI to discover this publicly?
Yeah. It makes you wonder whether or not they were dropped a dime, if the FBI may have been dropped a dime by somebody at one of these schools or...
This is, again, not being in law enforcement, but knowing a lot of friends in the law enforcement community, this is definitely something that's been investigated for a long time. This wasn't just, oh, let's tap a phone of an agent's assistant and look through his financial records and expense reports and see, oh, he's making payments.
Mm-hmm. This is not something that would end a program at one of these schools, is it, or could it be?
I personally believe, and working in sports for a long time, I don't think it's going to kill the NCAA. It's going to kill a lot of coaches' reputations, no question. Sean Miller will never see a basketball court again. Some players, whether they were partaking or not, you know, there are three sides to every story. One side, player side, and the truth. But the point is, the basketball, and especially NCAA, is such a behemoth that when you have sponsors like Coca-Cola paying upwards of $50 million a year for the NCAA, it's not going to go away, but these programs are going to be damaged for a while.
Lisa, hang on with us. We're going to talk more about that part of it because there are some major sponsors involved in this. We'll talk about what may be going on in their crisis communications offices as well as we continue with Lisa Dross this morning from from Serafin Associates. She's a crisis communications expert there.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Everyone, welcome back to the program. It's 5:22. We're on this morning with Lisa Dross of Serafin and Associates, crisis communication expert. Lisa, we're talking about this NCAA controversy, and you mentioned that these coaches, some of the coaches may never coach again, but some of these coaches may actually end up in jail.
It's quite possible. If we're talking, it's a federal investigation. If wiretapping, again, that wire doesn't lie. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of putting the pieces together and having the investigators pull everything together and give it to the prosecutors.
You also mentioned that lots of big money in terms of sponsorships are in play for March Madness. What do you think are the discussions now going on at some of those companies? Do you think, I'm sure they're probably locked in with contracts, but they have to be kind of nervous, right?
I would say there's a little bit about the NCAA aggressively monetizes every aspect that it can of its entire entity. And we were talking a little bit before the break about Coca-Cola. Sports Business Journal did a study about a little bit over a year ago. Of all the people surveyed, nearly 41% of those surveyed knew that Coca-Cola was the number one sponsor of the NCAA. That's paying off at that $50 million a year deal or so. CBS has a $10.8 billion 14-year deal, and I think they just got an extension for the tournament and everything else. Will the companies be taking a step back and looking at what they are doing, perhaps? Could they be stepping in and saying, hey, some of the money that we're giving to you, we want it earmarked for certain things, perhaps? But this is also, we talked a little bit about this off air, also about the situation with the NRA and corporations pulling away from the NRA. Corporations have a brand. You have to protect your brand. But is it when it becomes criminal, as we are talking about in the NCAA, or is it an emotional decision like we're talking about the NRA? Mm-hmm. Those are two different things that corporations have to weigh when they're talking about their brand and where it's being exposed.
With March Madness so close, it's almost hard. It would almost be hard for anybody to make a decision this close to all of this, right? Or no?
I doubt corporations are going to pull out right now. You might see a different type of a campaign or a goodwill message or a, you know, kind of an ethical message coming out from some of these campaigns to help educate future players, current players, parents, universities, teachers, fans. But it's still a business. And we're talking the Pac-12 tournaments in Vegas. And let's not even talk about all the things in Vegas that are going on right now about the tournament. There are people that have already placed bets for some of these schools that are now under investigation.
Yeah. And also in the backdrop of all of this, you know, I think the Supreme Court deciding about sports betting, right? That's on the horizon, just nationally, maybe not college sports betting, but here we're encouraging more sports betting, and it's all sort of blurred. All of these lines are sort of blurred.
I don't think that's ever going to go away.
Yeah. You mentioned the NRA thing, and while you're here, I want to talk to you about that. We've seen maybe a dozen companies now back away. It's interesting you talk about it as an emotional decision rather than a financial decision. These companies probably weren't making money off of the NRA, or were they?
It depends on what the target audiences are. And the target audience for the NRA is going to be quite different in the South than it is here, or up in New York, or in California. So corporations, while a company like Coca-Cola goes after the NCAA because that's their audience, they want the college kids, certainly a corporation like Coca-Cola is not going to match up with the NRA because there are not a lot of college kids in the NRA who believe in it. So this marketing decision for these corporations is really also a geographical decision. And you were talking about what's happening in Georgia with the threat with Delta Airlines and the tax cuts. And that, again, is a part of the country that play wouldn't work here.
So the NCAA, back to that story, do you foresee that they're going to launch some sort of educational campaign to say, hey, this is not who we are. This is not what we're about. I mean, I can see that coming.
I can see that coming. There's also the never-ending discussion about, okay, it's time to pay the players. If players can't come out right after high school into the NBA and they have to go to college, and the NCAA is making so much money on this, yes, some of the money goes to scholarships and helps programs and divides among the top schools for the program. But somehow, some way, there's got to be a talk about what are we going to do with these players and how are we going to make this system right. And the education component could be part of it, but I think decisions and changes need to be made to protect the NCAA brand. And also each university now. Each university that's damaged by these programs is going to be tougher, obviously, to recruit players. But also, there might be the people that don't want to go to that university because, they're involved in something illegal.
Yeah.
Allegedly.
Mm-hmm. And this, we've been talking about just what we know about now with regards to this controversy. It could get a lot worse before it gets better because we could hear tapes. We could hear more charges come in this. So it could get worse before it gets better.
There's no question. This does not look good when the FBI has wiretaps on coaches and agents. And you know this is going to keep going on and on and on because the lore is that this has been happening for a long time.
Yeah. Alyssa, good seeing you, and thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you, Steve.
Alyssa Druss from Serafin & Associates, crisis communication expert there. Always good to see you this morning, and please come back.
Hi, this is Catherine Davis with today's NO Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoNO.com. AdStructure, a startup that's building tools to let customers shop for things online using voice commands, has been acquired by Bazaar Voice, an Austin-based marketing tech company. Chicago-based AdStructure, which launched in 2014, uses machine learning and natural language processing to give brands intelligent digital assistance to help customers find and purchase products. Airbnb is launching a new high-end rental option called Airbnb Plus, and Chicago is one of the first 13 global cities that will offer the feature. Airbnb Plus homes will be inspected and verified in person against a checklist covering cleanliness, comfort, and design. And Monica and Andy, a Chicago-based startup that sells clothes for babies and toddlers, has raised $6.6 million in new equity funding. That's today's NO Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoNO.com and sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. It's 540 here in our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Thanks for being with us. New Illinois State Task Force launches an attack on jobless youth. Business leaders and legislators are working together to offer employment solutions for young people. We're happy to have with us this morning CEO of Chicago Cook Workforce Partnership, Karen Norrington Reeves. Karen, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about this partnership and what your goal is here.
Sure. So the Chicago Cook Workforce Partnership is the administrative agency for the city of Chicago and Cook County that oversees all workforce development. So job training, job placement, all the funds that are involved in the creation of opportunities for people. And this task force is about helping to attack this joblessness that we see amongst our young people.
Talk to us about that specifically. What kind of numbers are we talking about here? How significant is this issue?
So in the state of Illinois, it's over 190,000 young people between the ages of 16 and 24 who are both out of work or out of school. And in Cook County alone, we are at just under 90,000 young people between the city and the county.
We oftentimes hear that this gets worse in the summertime, but these numbers are year-round numbers.
Absolutely. And they're persistent. They really have not budged much, although, you know, despite great efforts nationally, these numbers are persistent. Part of the problem is because, you know, every year we're adding to the rolls, even though we're taking kids off by getting them connected to employment. Every year kids graduate and are not going on to college or not going into full-time unsubsidized employment. We're adding to that number.
And so what is the first step here? Is it training that becomes the most important first step?
So training is certainly a significant and important foundation, but that training doesn't necessarily have to come after high school. It can happen while people are in school, but training is fundamental. And, you know, 60% of the jobs require post-secondary education of some sort, whether it's vocational training or some technical skill that is unique to a particular job.
And there's an interesting conversation going on right now in the business community about how to get past that, because there could be candidates, qualified candidates in this group that we're talking about who have not gone through that education process.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that. So what we find is that our communities are chock full of untapped potential, that you know, our companies have these screening processes that require, you know, a bachelor's degree or require a certain level of training. And really, when you look further, they may not be, those criteria may not actually be aligned with the job, or they may be barriers to bringing in people who actually have the skills necessary to do the job well with some additional supports at work.
So how do you knock down that barrier? Is it just a conversation you have with companies to say, hey, listen, maybe you can post this opening differently?
So some of it is that it's the relationship building with the employers, which is also very much a significant part of our work. It's really about building that relationship, doing a deep dive and understanding what the employer's real needs are. So, you know, in our industry, we talk about the purple squirrel and how an employer will come to you and what they describe is, you know, this purple squirrel with pink polka dots that can fly, right? When in reality, you just need somebody who can show up to work on time, has some manual dexterity, is thoughtful, has some critical thinking skills, right? And so it's really about how do you test in the hiring process for the skills that you need to show up every day at work. And those skills may not necessarily be tied to a bachelor's degree.
Issue that we're talking about, finding kids jobs, finding young people jobs, can solve a whole lot of other problems in our community too, can't it?
Indeed. So if you are occupied during the day, you are not out making mischief in the streets, right? If you are focused on not only this job, but what your career pathway is going to be, you're influencing and impacting the other people around you. And so having that job is a life-changing, life-altering experience.
Talk to us a little bit about the event that's coming up on March 2nd. There's going to be a youth hearing, and you've got the who's who of legislator and community and organizations involved in this.
Absolutely. So this is something that happens. This has been an annual hearing, but this year is different, I think, because there is a task force specifically focused on this issue. And so we have this. It's a press conference and a hearing that will be held. It's a convening by the state legislature, and we're talking about how do we help build the economy, how do we strengthen our youth, and how do we, by then, you know, strengthen our communities in order to educate and employ our out-of-school youth. So you're right, we've got a who's who of folks coming in to speak on these issues and really provide data and solid information and solid ideas around policy creation and funding.
This is obviously something that the state lawmakers are working for. Is there some sort of legislative angle to this that we might see come later?
Absolutely. To really talk about how do we best utilize the funds that we have, whether they be federal dollars or state-generated dollars, around solving these problems and really thinking about strategic policies that will help prevent the flow of young people who are coming out of school, not connected to the workforce, and also help us on the back end with those that are already out in that population. How do we help support them in the way that makes the most sense, and also, most importantly, get the business community deeply engaged?
And then the big score for all of this is actual hiring. And you have a couple of hiring dates, screening dates coming up for Chicago. Tell us about that.
Sure. So with the Chicago Cook Workforce Partnership, we oversee a number of hiring initiatives. And, you know, we've been very successful at getting young people and others employed since our launch. So we employ generally anywhere from, you know, 10 to 15,000 people in the course of a year. So we have some key programs coming up. One is called Opportunity Works. That is for young adults who are interested in exploring careers in manufacturing or transportation, distribution and logistics, or information technology. They can call 312-603-0200 to learn more about that one. And then Hospitality Hire Chicago is a partnership that we have with a host of tourism, retail, and hotel industry organizations in the city of Chicago. And we will be doing pre-screening from March 1st through March 9th. People can text HIRE ME to 77453, and they will get information about the pre-screening event for our big launch this year for Hospitality Hire Chicago.
Yeah, and there's lots of positions that are possibly available there, full and part-time, catering manager, sales manager, line cooks, front desk, night auditor. I mean, the nice list of potential jobs there.
Yes, and all jobs that lead to family-sustaining wages. Many of them have lots of benefits built in. They're full-time jobs and really great opportunities to build a career path within the hotel, tourism, and retail industry.
What would your message be to young people who are starting out on this path? I would imagine their life can be pretty frustrating as they hit one closed door after another.
Absolutely. What I would say to them is, there are resources available to you. We are here to help you, and not just help you get a job, but to make sure that you have the proper uniform for that job, that you have the ability to secure transportation to and from training. Often, many of the training programs offer stipends during the course of the training. So there are a whole world of resources available to you. You just have to call us. We have to get connected to one another. So we thank you, Steve, for giving us the opportunity to really have a platform to announce this information.
Well, you're very welcome. Please come back anytime and share with us as many of these job events as you want. Karen Norrington-Reeves, we appreciate you being with us this morning.
Thank you so much.
All right, Karen is the CEO of Chicago Cook Workforce Partnership. You can follow them on Twitter at ShyCookWorks and head over to their website at workforceboard.org, workforceboard.org, and again at Twitter at ShyCookWorks.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are down 52 points this morning. NASDAQ Futures off about 15, S&P futures down about 7. Let's get the latest on agriculture and commodities. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. At the Chicago Mercantile Exchange yesterday, live cattle futures traded lower. The benchmark April contract touching a two-week low. Following the bearish cattle on feed report from the Department of Agriculture on Friday, the government Friday reported that cattle placed on feed numbers were up 4.4% from a year ago. Feeder cattle and lean hog futures also ended the day lower. So looking at those nearby closing prices, the June lean hog contract down 65 cents a hundredweight, the April live cattle contract down 85 cents, and the April feeder cattle contract down 35 cents a hundredweight. Meanwhile, the screen on the grain market at the Board of Trade yesterday, pretty much green, except for soybeans. March soybeans down 2 cents a bushel for the day. But March wheat ended up 8 cents, and March corn ended up 2.25 cents a bushel for the day in yesterday's trade. And there's a meeting coming up today in Washington, D.C., and ahead of that meeting, farm groups are urging President Trump in a letter yesterday not to weaken the nation's biofuels policy, requiring corn-based ethanol to be blended into gasoline, calling it a critical engine of rural American jobs. The president will meet with members of the cabinet and Congress in today's session. That's our report for this morning. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Tuesday, February 27th. We'll get an update on durable goods orders from the government today. Also, a report on international trade in goods. The S&P CoreLogic Case-Shiller Home Price Index is out today. We'll also get an update on consumer confidence. Jerome Powell is out speaking today, the head of the Federal Reserve. So he'll likely have some information to share as well. We'll be watching his words for any kind of hint about economic and monetary policy, especially potential rate increase coming at the March meeting. Earnings today from Macy's Booking Holdings. That's the former Priceline company, Express Scripts, and Discovery Communications as well. All coming today. Some things that could move the markets on this Tuesday, February 27th.